You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Why in the world did I get interested in this subject of de-churching in America? I was a pastor in Orlando, Florida, and that's where I still am. I work for the Keller Center for Cultural Apologetics now, which is a division of the Gospel Coalition. But at this time, we had noticed that there were many, 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 many people in our city who had just stopped going to church altogether. And we had run across some data that said that about 42% of the people in our city had stopped going to church. So we're like, well, what's going on with that? That's the second, that'd be the third largest demographic behind gender and ethnicity in the city of Orlando. So that's like 2 million people. So we felt like as elders and pastors in our church, we needed to know more about what was going on here. We never intended to write a book. We were going to just do this because we had a podcast, and we were just going to, you know, do a whole season on de-churching in America. Well, I was the executive producer and the writer for that podcast, and so I started digesting all the research that was out there on why people stopped going to church. And there wasn't much data that was there. Most of it was too old, there wasn't enough of it, and it wasn't actionable for, you know, for us to make decisions about what would it look like for us to be more effective in our ministry. And so we also needed data that was after kind of some of the fracturing of evangelicalism. We needed data that was after COVID. We needed data that was going to be able to be published in academic journals. But we also needed to have insights that were relevant for denominational leaders, pastors and clergy, and lay people. And so we set about trying to get to design a survey that would get the kind of information that all of those different parties would need in order to be able to make better decisions about what's going on. And so the number one thing that we learned is that we are currently in the largest and fastest religious shift in United States history. And what that means is that over 40 million people have stopped going to church in America. So that's 1 in 6 US adults have stopped. And most of that is over the last 25 years. In addition to this, just in terms of just trying to get a sense of the scale and size of this, this is larger than the First Great Awakening, Second Great Awakening, and all the Billy Graham Crusades combined. It's not just larger than those things, it's also faster. And so the previous fastest religious shift in US history was the time right after the Civil War when people, you know, returned to their homes, and that was a period of very fast, positive churching. This is just moving in the other direction. All right, so what is de-churching? How do we define this term? It didn't actually have a term, it didn't have a definition before we just kind of gave it one. And so here's what we said. Somebody who's de-churched is somebody who's had a monthly habit of church going for an extended period of time and now goes less than once per year, basically not at all in a given year. And so that's what a de-churched person is. So there's 1 in 6 US adults fits this category. There's another category of people that's just beneath, like that's just above de-churched, that we call underchurched, people who go to church 1 to 11 times per year. We didn't include those people as being de-churched. So if you went to church at Christmas last year or Easter last year or those two things, you know, those people are not counted here. And that group of people is way larger than the de-churched. So these numbers could look a lot more scary, and they probably will in the years to come. And so this is what kind of de-churching has looked like over time. You can kind of see that things have picked up in the 1990s. So it's a little difficult to read, but the 1990s is where things kind of start looking like the NVIDIA stock chart there. So the de-churching that occurred in the 70s and 80s was largely out of mainline and then Roman Catholic churches, and then evangelicals are what kind of caused, you know, the big knock on evangelicals. We're always 10 to 15 years late on everything, every trend. So we were late to the game on de-churching. This is going to be difficult to read, but bear in mind, you know, I'll send you the PDF. Here's what's going on in this chart, okay? On the y-axis, the vertical axis, this is the percentage of people who say religion is very important to them. And on the x-axis, on the horizontal, is GDP per capita. Now, it's a little nerdy, okay? But what you're seeing here in the blue line is the line of best fit, if you remember that from statistics class. So what you see in the very top left is a bunch of very poor countries that are highly religious. And what you see on the bottom right is a bunch of very affluent countries that are very irreligious. And then you have this one weird green dot right in the middle of that. It doesn't fit anything, and that's the United States. This is what social scientists say. They say America is stubbornly religious. America is stubbornly religious. Now, here's the concern. If any of you are trained or whatever in, you know, quantitative sciences or in data, there's this concept of regression to the mean. Regression to the mean means that typically, over a long period of time, outliers don't remain outliers. And so the concern here is that if we think things are bad right now, there's a lot of air between that green line and that, or that green dot and that blue line. And so the concern is, yeah, there's still a lot of people who still go to church and they could all stop. One quick note, how many of you did any reading on the Pew Religious Landscape Survey that published in like February or March of this year? Okay, just a few. Okay, you read some articles that were, you know, kind of talking about that. The most important headline from that survey, and that was a 37,000 person survey conducted in 23 and 24, was this. The percentage of Americans who identify as nones, so nones are nothing in particular, atheists or agnostic, that's been the fastest growing group of people in the American religious landscape for decades. That group is 30% of America. So 5% atheist, 5% agnostic, maybe six of each of those, and then 18 to 20% nothing in particular. Okay, the other thing that we learned from that survey was the decline of people who self-identify and or attend church it's been in a long, you know, 40-year decline, but that has leveled off. So the people who have self-identify as nuns has leveled off, and the people who have been disaffiliating from being Christian has also leveled off. Sounds like good news, right? So in the last 3 years, there's been no appreciable difference in growth of the nuns, and there's been no increase in people who have been disaffiliating from being Christian. What I want to tell you is that that temporary leveling off of those things is going to be temporary. It won't remain this way, and here's why. In spite of the encouraging things that we're seeing about many Gen Z people with respect to faith and the Christian faith and even the evangelical faith, as a whole, Gen Z is far less religious than either the greatest generation or the baby boomer generation. And so what will happen as members of the greatest generation and the baby boomer generation pass away, and as members of Gen Z and Gen Alpha become adults, the country will become less religious and it will become less Christian. This is just what's known as generational replacement. The one caveat I would say to that is, unless we see kind of widespread revival or renewal. Certainly those things are possible. Certainly we should be praying to that end. But the current situation is, it's good that the pace of those things has leveled off for these past few years, but this is going to be a brief pit stop, most likely. Okay. All right, so why did things pick up in the 1990s? We're going to spend a little bit more time in this on our second session on some of the history, so I'm going to kind of go through this pretty quickly. But a couple things occurred during the 90s. You had the fall of the Soviet Union, you had the rise of the internet, and then you know, towards the end of the 90s, high-speed internet. And then we also had the rise of the religious right. And then at, you know, in the very beginning of the next decade, we had 9/11. And so overnight with 9/11, the biggest enemies to the United States geopolitically went from kind of godless atheists who were communists to religious fundamentalists. And so a lot of those things, you know, created complex ways in which people, you know, thought about religion in American life. Before we did this study, there were two older stories that were being told about why did all these people stop going to church. So if your media diet leaned a little bit to the left, the story that was being told there is it's the church's fault. So things like racism, misogyny, clergy scandal, clergy abuse, Christian nationalism, political syncretism, those kinds of things. If your media diet leaned a little bit to the right, then the story that was being told there was, well, it's the culture's fault. It's things like secular progressivism. It's things like the sexual revolution, these kinds of things. Well, whose story is right? Is it the church's fault or is it the culture's fault? And the reality is both of those stories, there's a lot of truth in both of those stories. And you can find a few million people that fit this story, and you can find a few million people that fit this story. Here's the problem. In between those two stories, there's a big bell curve of people that don't really fit this story and that don't really fit that story, okay? And it's really, really good news, and here's why. What in the world can I do about all of these things? You know, can I fix, you know, as one person, can I fix, you know, the church around America? No. You know, as one person, can I fix the culture, you know, of, you know, the things that plague American culture and society? No. But here's what we learned. 30 of the 40 million people who stopped going to church, the overwhelming bell curve here, 75% of the people who stopped going, they stopped going for the silliest reasons, okay? It's number one, I moved. Number two, going to church is inconvenient. Number three, there was some kind of family change, marriage, divorce, remarriage, the birth of a child, stuff like that. Well, guess what? That's good news. Okay? And it's good news that people left for all these kind of boring and pedestrian reasons, because for most of them, there is not some huge pain point. Think about that for a second, okay? Now, I don't want to minimize that there are 10 million people. So that first group, we called them the casually dechurched. And then the second group, the 10 million people, we called them dechurched casualties. These people left with high pain points, highly intentionally, and a lot of suffering. So things like they didn't fit within the church, suffering, church hurt, clergy scandal, the whole nine yards. Now, most of the conversations that have been happening around dechurching were really about this group of people. Because this is something, you know, there's headlines here that are far more clickable and far more interesting. This story is boring, okay? Nobody wants to hear, you know, this story. But the fact that this is a boring story is really, really good news for all of us. And what you'll see by the time that we're done here with this first session is that people are just looking for two things from us. They just want a healthy local church that has good people, good relationships. They're looking for a good church with good relationships, okay? That's something that every single one of us in here can do. We all have a role to play in all that. Nobody has to be, you know, fancy pants or, you know, whatever, you know, or highfalutin or whatnot. Okay, all right, so it's important, though, that we break down these 40 million people into three levels of need. There's people who need a nudge from us. There's people who need to be at our dinner table. And then there's people who are really who are much more distant and far away, and we're going to need to be in their lives for years or decades, and it still might not make a difference. Let me talk about each. So, and as we kind of go through some of the profiles that we're talking about here, I'll kind of try to explain, okay, this group's in, you know, this is like nudge, this is like nudge and dinner table, and then these are, you know, people that are in that third category. The people who need a nudge, these are people who have probably been only out of church for a few years. It definitely seems like they understand the gospel, they probably have the Holy Spirit, they're probably regenerate, and they know that they need to be back in church. They know that church is good for them. You know, and here's how you know. The second group of people might have a little bit of friction, the people who need your dinner table. Maybe they had a bad experience here, you know, there. Nothing necessarily super fatal, but, you know, there were some things that, you know, when you kind of hear their story, you're like, yeah, that's off, you know, or, man, I'm sorry, that was your experience. So the people who are the nudge folks, they're ready for the front door of the church. The people who are dinner table, they need the side door. They need to be, you know, whether it's literally your dinner table or just, you know, kind of more metaphorically of just like needing to be around some Christian community that isn't necessarily Sunday morning yet. And then the third category of people, these are people who have been really, really hurt. You're just going to have to be in those people's lives, keep the relationship, and really, it's going to be a lot of prayer. And so you trust the Lord with what only He can do. And obviously in all of these things, you know, it's all only the Lord, okay? We always want to be, you know, prayer, you know, in prayer for, you know, for everybody. It's not anything that, you know, that we can do, but we all play a role in these things. And we all, you know, live and make actions as if those actions are meaningful, because they are. And so those are the kind of the three levels of need. Okay, I want to talk to you about the four different types of people who stopped going to evangelical churches. All told, of the 40 million people who stopped going to church, 15 million of them left evangelical churches. So these four profiles are of the 15 million people who stopped going to evangelical churches. So the first group, cultural Christians, these are people who, this is 8 million people, and then the second, third, and fourth groups are between 2 and 2.5 million people each. So let's talk about the cultural Christians first. They're a little bit more male than female. They're middle-aged. They've been gone for a little over a decade. And the story I want you to hear about this group of people is that the American dream has been working for them. And American society works for them. And that's just kind of what this group of people seems to be really just kind of living for, you know? Middle class, upper middle class, suburban life, overwhelmingly white. Here's what's interesting. So when you put together profiles for stuff like this, we had about 600-700 data points per person on this survey. You don't sort based on all of those things. What you do is you pick like 20 or 25 really, really important factors. Things like demographics, things like beliefs, things like why did you stop going, when did you stop going, those kinds of things. One of the things that we did not let the machine learning algorithm do when it created these profiles is we did not let it see race or ethnicity, because we wanted to see, okay, well, how's this thing going to sort it absent being able to see those things? So what's interesting about these clusters is that they are highly ethnically sorted, even though we weren't sorting and had no ability to sort on those things. So I just want to say that race and ethnicity is a very relevant factor in terms of how people experience America, even though, you know, race is a biological fiction, it's a sociological reality. Okay, here's something that's really interesting. So look at this. Only 1% of this group of people would say that Jesus is the Son of God. Okay? So this is not a group of people who are Christians. They may have been around the gospel, these kinds of things. They had a very low view of the Bible as well. And the orthodoxy score basically relates to things like that you'd find in the Nicene Creed. So the Trinity, the resurrection, the sinlessness of Jesus, those kinds of things. Okay, so this group was interesting. Yeah, they were center left politically, but they were not racially sensitive. Remember, they're 98% white. And here's why I stopped going. Going to church was inconvenient. They moved. Friends weren't going. Suffering changed their view. Had some weird stuff about gender identity and had some stuff, some sexual stuff, scandal in clergy, and some that just worshiped on the internet. Okay, here's why they said that they would be willing to return. Now remember, over half of all of these people, of these four profiles, are willing to return to an evangelical church today. And this group is a little over half willing to return to an evangelical church. And mind you, these are not, these people are not Christians. You know, you can't be a Christian and say that Jesus isn't the Son of God. So why would they be willing to return? Number one, new friends. Lonely, want to make new friends. Supernatural phenomenon. That's like your Bible's floating on the table or something like that. Begin to miss church. Friend invites me, spouse wants to go, move and want to make new friends, good community. Six of these eight things are relational, okay? Y'all, this is not rocket science, okay? You know, people have needs. They have relational needs. We're relational creatures. We're designed this way, okay? So what do they need from us? They need sincere community. Their mental health was actually really bad. Relative to, like, you wouldn't think so, you know, given their income, their education, those different kinds of things. It's an avenue. Obviously, sound doctrine and spiritual formation, big, you know, big concerns there, obviously, since they don't really seem to understand the gospel and even the basics of, like, the Nicene Creed level Christianity. And then the age of opportunities, 18 to 39. All right, second group, mainstream evangelicals. These are all nudge folks. That first group was like a mixture of nudge and dinner table. These are all nudge folks. Here's how you're gonna identify a mainstream evangelical, okay? This group trends more female, 61%, but they're roughly the same age as that other profile. But look at this, they only left like 3 years ago. So this is the only group that COVID actually impacted. Here's how you know when you're talking to this group of people, okay? You're having a conversation on the cul-de-sac or the, you know, the sports sideline for your kids, or you know, you're having, you know, lunch at the, you know, the Commons at, you know, Ohio State or whatever, and you're talking about, you know, maybe the conversation of, you know, spiritual things or faith kind of comes up, and you ask the question like, hey, are you a person of faith? And you're like, yeah, you know, I used to go to such and such church, you know, where I grew up, or I used to go to this church in the city. You're like, oh, you still go there? Here's where you know. I haven't been in, you know, whatever, X months, 2 years, 3 years. I'm going to go back as soon as, you know, travel baseball's up with Tommy those guys. But the you know the moment that you hear the, that's this profile, okay? This profile is the lowest hanging fruit. Literally, all you have to do when you hear the is you just invite this group of people back to church, whether that's the church that they had been at, or, you know, to the church that you're going to, or hey, would you help me? Would you let me, like, help you find, you know, a good local church for you where you'd feel comfortable? These are all nudge people. 100% of this profile is willing to return to an evangelical church today. So just know that when you hear the, like, that's all you got to do, okay? And I could tell you story after story after story of, like, just trust me. You start to have these conversations, you'll hear it, and you're like, oh, man, Mike was right. Like, that's crazy. I can't believe he told me the formula here. Anyways, okay. So they had slightly less education and income than the first profile. But look at this, 98%, Jesus is the Son of God, very high view of the Bible. They have a higher view of the Bible and a higher view and a better orthodoxy score than people than evangelicals who still go to church. So it definitely seems like the Holy Spirit is there. They seem regenerate by and large. So they trend center-right politically, but they are more racially sensitive than the first group that was center-left. So sometimes narratives are more complicated than the realities. But yeah, you can see a lot of the reasons why people stop going here, they're largely those casual reasons. What do they need from us? They're really just looking for three things, this profile. They're looking for good community, good local church, and good pastor. It's no more complicated than that. All right, third profile, ex-evangelicals. Okay, this is a complicated profile. Typically, if I say that word, and we're talking about this, you're probably picturing somebody who's female, in the 25 to 40 age range. She is college educated, maybe even graduate school educated, and there is significant pain and friction and church hurt. Now, that person is in this profile, okay? But she is maybe only one in five of that group. Here's why we named this profile ex-evangelical. 0% of this 2.5 million people are willing to return to an evangelical church. That's a pretty good, you know, ex-evangelical would be a very good name for that, for a group of people who are, you know, none of them are willing to do that. But here's what's interesting. They've been gone for almost 20 years, and they're not that average 25 to 40. Their average age is 53. Here's what also you need to understand about this group of people is America is not working for them. Income, education, institutions, politics. This group is 58% politically independent. That's six times, so 58% third party, okay? That's six times any of these other profiles, okay? America is not working for this group of people. Now, but here's what's interesting. Imagine a group of people that none of them are willing to go to an evangelical church, yet 97% say Jesus is the Son of God. Okay, that's interesting. All right, you got my attention. All right. And second highest orthodoxy score, second highest view of the Bible. Okay, there's some real opportunity. There's some people who do seem to be legitimately in the faith and regenerate. And okay, well, what do we do? This group is definitely of, like, almost across the board, de-churched casualties. Okay, they're allergic to racism, they're allergic to misogyny, allergic to clergy scandal, clergy abuse, Christian nationalism, political syncretism, all of those things. And we ought to be allergic to those things too, because they're all problems. And so, I'm fond of Tim Keller, miss him. One of the things that he used to often say to many a person in New York City, you know, who had objections to the Christian faith, he would just ask him, what bothers you about, you know, Christians and Christianity? And he just sits back and listens, and he's like, you know, four things out of five that people will list, like, yeah, that's a, you know, I have concerns about that too, you know? So a lot of times with people, we just need to sit with them in their stories and give them the space to be able to tell the things of the places where they've had friction. And look, a lot of times people's objections to Christianity is that their experience of it hasn't been Christian enough. Okay? Well, that's good. We can agree with that, you know? Do we want people to be consistent with God's word and his ethics and the way that he encouraged us to treat people? Great. We can validate those concerns that people have, and we can point people back to, you know, the Jesus of the Bible and the kind of ethics, you know, that are there. Okay, so when you read these reasons, there's a lot of sadness that's there. There's a lot of pain. I didn't fit within the congregation, didn't experience much love within the congregation, disagree with the politics of the congregation and the clergy, negative experiences that they had in an evangelical church, no longer believed what the church did. Okay, Why weren't they willing to return? Now, none of these people are willing to return to an evangelical church, but 79% are willing to return to a Christian church of some sort. Okay, well, that's great news. 4 out of 5 willing to go to a church of some sort. Look, in my city, in Orlando, we have, you know, I'm evangelical. I'm not going to apologize, you know, for that. But there are other churches in our city that are not evangelical that are very clear about teaching God's word. Many of those traditions are either Black Protestant traditions, or in our city, the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida is one of 3 dioceses in the country that is very, very orthodox on the gospel. And so when we have people who fit these profiles, I help them find local churches that are in those traditions that don't have all the, you know, it doesn't have the cultural trappings or whatever, and that, you know, are triggering for many of the people in this profile. Okay, so these are some of the reasons why they might be willing to return. And again, it just boils down to healthy local church and good people. What do they need from us? They need a nonpartisan church community. There needs to be doctrine and ethics need to go hand in hand. They need empathetic community and clergy. Here's something that's really, really tough that you got to recognize about this group of people. 84% of this profile is battling suicidal thoughts on a weekly or greater basis. You don't know what other people are going through, okay? And so, you know, it can be hard to just, you know, if you're not battling those things yourself or you've never gone through a season of that before, you know, it's just important for us to live in an understanding and empathetic way with other people. And what would it be or feel like if that was something that you were just kind of dealing with on a regular basis? So just something to take into account. All right, 4th profile, BIPOC. BIPOC is an acronym. It's a technical term. It stands for Black Indigenous Persons of Color. This entire profile is 0% white, okay? We didn't plan that. It's just how the clustering ended up working. And so this profile is 76% Black and 68% male. That means that 52% of this 2.5 million people are Black men, okay? So when you're thinking about this profile, you're thinking middle-aged Black man who left evangelicalism in the late 1990s, roughly right before, right after Y2K. Okay, here's what's interesting. This group of people has the highest income and the highest education of any of the profiles that we're looking at here. They also have the highest full-time work rate, which is interesting because their average age is 51. You'd think that, you know, with that, you know, probably you'd have 30+% retirees. These are very hardworking, very upwardly mobile, mid to high six-figure average income African-American men. Now, bear in mind, this group of people has been out of church for 25 years. The longer you're at a church, the more your orthodoxy score, it erodes, like the half-life, you know, over time. And so while these numbers don't look good, and they're not good on, you know, view of Jesus and the view of the Bible and the orthodoxy score, these folks have been out of church for a quarter century. Now, imagine this. 2/3 of this group of people are willing to return to an evangelical church today. Can you imagine not doing something for a quarter century and being willing to just do it again 25 years later? And so there's a lot of opportunity here in this particular profile as well. These folks, I think, are largely in the dinner table kind of category here. They tend to be independent to center left, not super racially sensitive, interestingly enough. So maybe it's a little bit more Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. So why did they leave? Moved, faith wasn't working, other priorities for time and money, suffering view, changed their view of God and the congregation, a little bit of doubt, a little bit of clergy scandal, didn't see the congregation doing enough good in the community, message is not relevant. Now, look at this. 7 out of 8 things, look at this. What are they? It's relationships, okay? So what do they need from us? Cultural and emotional intelligence, deep friendship, gotta have sound doctrine and spiritual formation. And this group left earlier than the other ones. The age of opportunity here is more in the 13 to 30 time frame. I'm gonna skip the mainline profile. You guys can read that if you want to, if you get the PDF and all that. All right, I wanna talk about a few different myths. Number one, people leave only because of negative experiences that they've had with the church. That's not the case. 3 out of 4 are not leaving primarily for negative reasons. Number two, people are leaving primarily, young people are leaving because of the secular university. Here's what's really interesting. If you grew up evangelical and you go on to college and you go and get a graduate degree, 97% of people that follow that path right there will remain in church. Education is not our enemy, it is our friend. Now, most of the people who are dechurching are doing it in that 18 to 29-year-old time frame. And so I understand why this myth exists. Because the assumption, well, what happens during that time? Wow, it's got to be the university, okay? You are 7 times less likely to dechurch if you go and get a graduate degree than if you only had some college or only a high school education. In addition to this, you're 3 times as less likely to dechurch if you do 2 things during that college time frame. You're involved with a campus ministry, and you're involved in a local church. There's no difference, though, if you only do 1 of those 2 things. So if you do a campus ministry only, or you're involved in a local church only, there's no difference on dechurching. But if you do both of those 2 things during the college years, you're 3 times less likely to dechurch. So what happens so many times in that 18 to 29-year-old time frame? You move. Every time you move, it changes all your relationships. It changes every institution to which you're connected. You know, and so, you know, we've all been there. Move is a 4-letter word, right? And you have to go, every time you move, you have to go and pick up everything all over again. It's not just your stuff, it's all your relationships, it's all the things that you show up to, all of those things. And it's like, you know, how many times did you move during that 18 to 29-year-old time frame? I mean, I've been married for 19 years and we've moved 11 times. You know, so that's what's going on. Don't blame the secular university. It's not what's going on, okay? All right, people leave the church because they've left the faith. So, you know, sometimes people are like, you know, particularly sometimes on the right, we're like, who cares about dechurching? You know, those people were never Christians to begin with. Like, good riddance, don't let the door, you know, hit you where the Lord splits you, you know? So, but it's more complicated than that. Of the 15 million people who left evangelical churches, it looks like about 5 million of those 15 million people still do seem to have Nicene Creed-level Christianity still intact, okay? So it's more complicated than, well, they went out from us because they were never one of us. It's not that it's not that simple. Okay. People are primarily leaving on the secular left. Okay, the dechurching that happened in the 1970s, 1980s, and early 90s was primarily of people who did lean left politically. Okay? It was probably for the first time in their life, especially with the collapse of the Soviet Union, where it's like, if you're my age or older, when we were younger, It would not have been abnormal if somebody said, if you asked the question, like, are you a Christian? And somebody said no. A very natural follow-up to that question would be, are you a communist? And that was a very normal thing in my childhood. It was like, okay, unless you were, you know, of a, you know, a people group that migrated here that had a very specific, you know, faith to them. And so, but what's happened in the last 10 years in particular, is that most of the dechurching that's happened in the last 10 years has been on the secular right. And the pace of dechurching on the secular right has been currently twice the pace that's happening on the secular left. Now, you can make the case that, well, the secular right's just catching up to the secular left. Fine, fair. But the total number of people that have been leaving on that side of the political equation is almost the same now. And so this should be a concern for us, and we should have, you know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, and we can say, okay, you know, when you're a shepherd and you have sheep, you can't just, like, okay, I have these sheep, I have to look out for them. Okay, I've got dangers, like, only in, you know, this 60 degrees right here. No, we have to, you know, when you're a shepherd, you have to take, you know, you have to think about all 360 degrees. Error and challenges and whatever can come at you from any number of different directions. And so I just want to remind us of that, you know, here with this, error can come at us from any number of different directions. Okay, people aren't wanting to come back. Obviously, we've covered that. Over half the 15 million people who left evangelical churches are willing to come back right now. Do you know what percentage of people went to church in 1776 in America? So I'll give you a hint. Peak churching in America was in the 1970s at about 70%. It was 17% in 1776. So per capita, people are three times as churched today as what we were at our founding. Look, I love America, I love our Constitution, love these different kinds of things, but sometimes we can tell some ahistorical stories about, you know, how religious or whatever we were at our, you know, at our founding, those different kinds of things. So it can get worse, it has been worse, and let's be careful with our nostalgia at points, okay? Dechurching is primarily happening to the upwardly mobile. No. The most likely person to go to church in America is married, they have kids, and they're in the middle or upper middle class, and they're white. That's the most likely profile of somebody who goes to church in America. Going to church in America has largely become a middle-class, upwardly mobile phenomenon. And I think that, okay, I'm glad that those people are going to church, but that is a problem. And so people who are on the very high end of income, and then people who are kind of below the 40th percentile income-wise, these folks have been forgotten. And maybe your mom said this to you or your dad, birds of a feather flock together. And we have to be careful in our local churches that we just don't just become just purely birds of a feather. We got to remember the people who are just kind of being overlooked and in the margins of culture and society, where the institutions aren't working for them, their relationships aren't working for them, the economics, the education, the political systems, you know, go on down the line. There's a lot of people who have just been forgotten about here in this country. And that doesn't, you know, that maps all over the place in terms of any way you can slice people demographically. There's all sorts of people who have just been forgotten. And y'all, it is hard to minister to people who have been forgotten, because forgotten people have hard things in their story. And if you've ever ministered to people with hard things in their story, stuff comes out sideways. And things that you would never do, or things that, you know, whatever, it just looks different, and you're not always going to understand. And it can be hard to persevere with people who have just seen things that are different than what you have. So I say all that to say this: be patient with people and try to remember folks who have, you know, who have seen things that are really hard. All right, last big myth, all's lost. It's not. If you don't hear anything else from me, from this whole talk and, you know, our time here together from this, I want you to hear this. I want to inspire you to one thing, and that's this. Take relational risk. Take relational risk. 3 out of 4 people that you talk to, this is not going to be a relationship-ending conversation. You invite them to church, you have spiritual conversation, whatever. This is not going to end the relationship. You remember, was it the first Indiana Jones, like the Ark of the Covenant comes out? Like, I want to open the Ark of the Covenant and have like the, you know, I want to like vacuum all the fear of man out of you here, because what were y'all told growing up? If you, there are two things you're not supposed to talk about with people. It's religion and politics, right? But then Jesus gave us the internet, and what do people want to talk about? People want to talk about this stuff. Come on. All right. So I want to inspire you to take relational risk. For some people, that's going to be a nudge. For some people, it's just going to be, you know, increasing intentionality with your dinner table. And then for other people, it's just going to be years and years and years of maybe even frustrating, kind of talking. All right. I want you to do something weird, okay? Everybody, you're going to take out your phone right now, okay? I want to stay in touch with you. You're going to go to this website right here, thekellercenter.org. This is where I work. This is a division of the Gospel Coalition. So just type into your, you know, your thing, thekellercenter.org. You're going to scroll down just a little bit to this spot here that says subscribe for updates for the Keller Center. You're going to put in your email, and you're going to hit that subscribe button. We send out 1 email a month, okay? If you don't like it after 2 months, you hit that unsubscribe button. Okay, this is the best way to keep in touch. So what our department does is we basically do, we're R&D for the church, research and development for the church. We produce resources that are going to help you communicate the gospel to the people who are already in your life more effectively. That's what we do. So thekellercenter.org, go ahead and, you know, put your email in there for that. I realized I don't think I have it in the slides, and maybe I'll do this for the next two kind of breakouts. But my email is michael.graham at thegospelcoalition.org. michael.graham@thegospelcoalition.org. So if you want this presentation, just literally just shoot me an email that says presentation, you know, in the subject line, and I'll send you a PDF of this so that you have this, you know, for your own notes. In addition to that, I'll probably send you a couple other things that might be helpful as well. So with those things being said, michael.graham@thegospelcoalition.org. Shoot me an email. I'll send you a PDF of the thing.